Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Vitalist Spark podcast. Throughout the life of this podcast, we've hosted a few episodes speaking about the importance of housing. Often, those conversations center on the critical roles that government can and should play in preventing and addressing homelessness and housing instability in Arizona. Today's episode, however, features someone who's developed a unique take on housing solutions in our state. Howard Epstein, by trade, is a national executive for Bank of America, but by passion, he's the creator of the Arizona Housing Fund, a voluntary, donation-based fund that's working to bring permanent supportive housing to vulnerable Arizonans. Let's dive in.
Thank you to all of our Vitalist Spark podcast listeners for tuning in today. We are joined by Howard Epstein, who's with Bank of America. He's a national executive for the real estate asset sales division. And he just so happens to be the founder of this little thing called the Arizona Housing Fund, which is what we're really here today to talk about. Howard, how are you today?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. Okay, before we go into the details of the Arizona Housing Fund, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and kind of what brought you to the world of housing in the first place.
Sure. So I wasn't born in Arizona, but I grew up here. I've been with Bank of America for a whopping 33 years, which nobody does that anymore. I actually got involved in the homeless and housing challenge and homeless and housing world probably 30 years ago, when I was asked by our bank to join the board of CAS, Central Arizona Shelter Services. I was on that board for probably close to 25 years, and I got to see the homeless situation up front and very close. Wasn't a big concern by most citizens back then, but obviously things have gotten much worse and much more of a challenge. So that started me in this passion of mine. 15 plus years ago, I became the board chairman of a nonprofit called Arizona Housing Inc., not related to my fund. They build, own, and manage permanent supportive housing, which helps our most vulnerable. So I got to see with my own eyes what happens when you bring new inventory to our markets and allow people to get off the streets, out of shelters, into permanent housing. That then led me to start the Arizona Housing Fund a few years ago, which has become my second full-time job.
When you started getting into this work, you started seeing the benefits of what happens when people are able to get into permanent supportive housing. What light bulbs went on in your head? What was it that you saw that actually kind of convinced you, oh, this is something that we should really be focusing on?
What we got to see is how stuck the continuum of housing care is. So if you look at all of our great nonprofits who do this kind of housing, so iconic names like UMOM and Native American Connections, Save the Family, et cetera, they're always full. I mean, all of their permanent supportive housing projects are full. Arizona Housing Inc., the one that I'm involved in, you know, there's at least a 6-month waiting list to get a unit somewhere. But what you see when a new project comes online, whether it's 50 units, 80 units, 100 units or more, you get to see it working. You'll get to see people moving out of CAS into permanent housing. You then get to see people coming off the streets to move into CAS, which is full. So every time we see a new project come online, you get to see the system working. And so that's what made me realize it's like, we know what the solution is. It's more permanent housing. Therefore, I'm going to try to develop some sort of vehicle to help fund more housing and keep this thing going. So that's the light bulb. You know, with all of the problems our society faces, the solutions are really complex and difficult. The solution's not complex here. We need more housing. It just costs money. We just have to have the will to do it.
The Arizona Housing Fund. Tell us about the origins of this thing. You and I, you know, we were just reminiscing. You and I had lunch maybe 3 or 4 years ago, kind of when this was an idea in your head and you were kind of shopping it around to different partners throughout the state and stakeholders throughout the state to see how and if it could actually be made possible. So tell us about the impetus behind this idea. And honestly, Howard, what gave you the audacity to think that this was something that we could achieve?
Yeah. So my original really great idea that didn't work out was that I really wanted to pass a law in the state that said every time there's an escrow transaction anywhere in the state, that a $25 fee would come out of whatever escrow it is, buying and selling a house, refinancing a house, a commercial sale, whatever, would be pulled out of the escrow. I wrote a white paper on it and said, you know, the money would go to the Arizona Department of Housing and establish this fund, 70% to housing, 30% to shelters. It was just this great plan. And everybody I showed it to loved it. And then everybody who knew anything about politics in the state said, it's great, but it's never going to pass here. Between propositions that have passed that said you can't ever tax a sale of that, all those things. Basically, I kept getting punched in the face and said, great idea, love it, you're not going to do it. So I kind of then said to myself, okay, well, it was a great idea. Now I'm going to go about my life. And some very dear friends of mine who are very passionate about this as well, particularly my friend Steve Hilton, who's CEO of Meritage, took me aside and said, this is way too good of a deal, way too good of a plan. Forget it, law. Let's take it private. Let's make it philanthropic. Let's make it voluntary. Steve said, as a home builder, I'll donate every time I do a sale. I'll ask my clients to donate, et cetera. So, you know, he kind of talked me into doing it at a lunch. And I remember driving home saying to myself, wow, I guess I just agreed to run this thing. I mean, it wasn't really something I wanted to do, but I felt like, okay, well, I'm destined to do it. So 3 years ago, we started it. We opened up a fund at the Arizona Community Foundation, who's our partner, established a website, and I started pitching it to everybody that I could, everywhere I could. Most notably, I wanted people who are in the housing business to get involved. So realtors and escrow companies and mortgage companies and home builders, et cetera. And it's evolved to, in a short 3 years, we've raised over close to $1.4 million through 4,000 individual donations. We just gave out our first set of four grants totaling $850,000. And every day we're signing up more and more partners and more money is coming in. It's a sustainable thing. And we are off and running. And I always say people, they can't solve this problem themselves, but they can be part of the solution. And this is a way to do it.
That's incredible. I mean, and congratulations on getting so far. I know it's been years in the making, but to go from an idea of we're going to introduce legislation and have a policy to completely shifting toward this is a privately generated opportunity and then actually getting to $1 million plus in funding, that's a relatively quick timeline. And so kudos and congratulations on getting to that place.
Thanks.
You said you've had 4,000 individual donations. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Are those from individuals like myself? If Marcus Johnson goes and purchases a home, I can opt into offering $25 to this fund. You also alluded to there's organizations, escrow companies, real estate agencies, or companies that are also donating.
Yep, it's all of the above. So we get everything, you know, most of our donations in terms of number of donations come in from title companies every day, where it's buyers, sellers, brokers, all being part of this. They're giving up $25 from their transaction to go straight into the Arizona Housing Fund. So it goes straight from the title company to the Arizona Housing Fund. So there's no checks or credit cards or anything like that. That's kind of a really cool thing about it. All the way up to big foundations that really like what we're doing and have been written some big checks. So you get everything in between. We've had all sorts of companies and people do really creative fundraisers. Somebody just sponsored a pub crawl 2 weeks ago and raised a bunch of money for us. Here's what we know. It's all voluntary. It's all philanthropic. It's all tax deductible. But in the end, it's just concerned citizens, companies, families, law firms, banks, et cetera, who say, we got a problem. We know the solution. Let's come together and try to fix it. And that's really what we're seeing.
So let's get into the operations a little bit. Let's dive a little bit deeper. So I'm approaching this. I'm not a housing expert. However, my wife and I have purchased a home years ago. So when we're filling out those documents, just that long, long list of documents that it takes to fill out when you buy a home, are you telling me that one of those documents is an opportunity to donate to the Arizona Housing Fund?
That's a really great question. And someday, every single transaction will have that opportunity. Right now, it's dependent upon your real estate broker to usually introduce it, bring it on. So there's a lot of real estate realtors around our state who participate in this, and they not only for themselves, but their clients. If they're participating, you're likely going to see it. If they're not, you may not. But someday, we're not there yet, but we'll get there. Someday, I'm hoping to have every title company in this state put it in their package. When you open up an escrow at whatever title company, and you have to fill out all the information of name, address, social security, where do you want the funds sent, or what's your bank? There's also going to be a form in there that says, would you like to donate $25 to the Arizona Housing Fund? It's tax deductible. It's to help this situation. Someday that's going to happen. We're not there yet. We have some title companies who are looking at it right now. But just like everybody knows, when you go renew your driver's license, you're going to be asked, do you want to be an organ donor? Someday, everybody's going to know when you do something at a title company, you're going to be asked, do you want to donate $25 to the Arizona Housing Fund? Look, everything takes a long time to roll out, and we'll get there hopefully sooner than later, but that's going to happen. So right now you can either ask your realtor, and oh, by the way, every realtor who puts your purchase agreement, that document to donate to the Arizona Housing Fund is actually in their document library at the Arizona Association of Realtors. So it's there. Yeah. Not every broker knows about it. Not every broker participates, but it's there right now for them to use. So yes, anybody buying and selling a home, for example, can participate.
That's fantastic. So anybody who's listening to this podcast, whether right now or in the future, who might be buying or selling a home, know that this is something that even if it's not directly introduced to you, you can ask about, and it's there. Yep. And able to be donated to.
That's right.
Tell us about these grants. You said that you've generated roughly $1.4 million over the last 3 years with this fund. You just put out grants to the tune of $850,000. Where are these dollars going to, and how do you identify where the dollars should go to?
Yes. So again, so our grants are narrowly focused on going to groups that do the following things. So one is you have to be a experienced nonprofit in this state of owning and operating permanent supportive housing and low-income housing. So again, there's probably 20 to 25 around the state that do this really well. 10 of them probably do 70% of it. Okay. So it's to nonprofits who have a really good track record of doing this. Secondly, it's got to be for bringing new inventory to our markets. So bringing new units, new housing, new opening up, as we talked about, that continuum of housing care, bringing people out of shelters, off of the streets, into new housing. Okay, so that's number two. And number three, we're really emphasizing that this helps our most vulnerable. So think about the person at CAS. Think about the person who's living unsheltered but needs a housing. We always say our target market, the people we're really trying to help right now, are the folks that are on something called the HMIS list. So HMIS is the Homeless Management Information System that HUD requires every county to keep. And on that, it's a live database, so it changes by the hour. If you don't have permanent housing and you want permanent housing, you can be on this list. So if you're living in an emergency shelter, a temporary shelter, transitional shelter, or worse, living unsheltered in your car on the street, you're on this list. There's 11,000 people in our state on this list right now. So if you ask me, who are we trying to help? It's those 11,000 people, veterans, seniors, people with severe disabilities, people with mental illness, people with addiction issues. Those are the people we're trying to help. That's what these equity grants are going for. So let me tell you about our grants and why our timing's been really perfect. I'll give you an example. So our four grants, St. Vincent de Paul is rolling out a 100-unit project. Arizona Housing Inc., 50 units. They just bought a hotel. I'll talk about that in a little second. And that's going for seniors and vets. There's a group in Chino Valley that helps families, and a group in Glendale, Arizona, that's helps families put them in the houses. So those are the four groups. Our grant process is unlike no other because we have no calendar. It's if we have the money and you meet our criteria, we're open for business. Okay, so because real estate, usually it's buying real estate, right? You got to buy a hotel, an apartment building. If you have the opportunity and you meet our criteria, submit a grant. And if we have money, we're going to try to help you. Here's the perfect example. A nonprofit bought a 50-unit motel at 29th Street in Van Buren. Wasn't the greatest motel. It was up and running, but it wasn't great. This nonprofit, who owns 700 permanent supportive housing units, bought this property, and they're going to house previously homeless vets and seniors, right? Our two are our fastest growing groups. What happened is the county is financing this because these are big dollar projects. They're not cheap. It usually takes government money, but they're usually built on pro formas and budgets that were done months ago and sometimes not years ago. Well, things are a lot more expensive than they were. So the county funded this whole thing built on a pro forma from, say, 14 months ago. Prices have risen. This agency came to us and said, here's what it was going to cost. We now have a shortfall between what we're getting funded for and what it's going to cost for us to actually do this. And we came in and said, we'll fund that so we can keep this thing going. So we kind of see ourselves now as that last gap piece of dollars that these nonprofits are going to need to do these projects. And we're happy to fill that role because we want to see these things happen and we want to see a lot more of it. So that's where our grants have gone. That's what they're going to be used for. Again, as we see new opportunities, we're going to try to keep it going.
When organizations are listening to this podcast right now, and they're thinking maybe they're one of those 20 some odd organizations across the state of Arizona who could use some additional support, who have some ideas, maybe there's some half-baked ideas about bringing new units onto the market, how do they raise their hand to say, we'd like to explore some opportunities with the Arizona Housing Fund?
Yeah, so process is pretty simple. You go to our website, arizonahousingfund.org. Just like anybody who actually also wants to donate, you go to arizonahousingfund.org. There's a donate button, and then there's also a menu for if you're interested in applying for a grant. So there you would click on the grant application process. Frankly, it's pretty simple and easy. Our grants, our applications are underwritten by our good friends at LISC, who you guys know. They're fabulous is what they do, better than anybody. So the applications go to LISC. LISC underwrites them for us, makes recommendations to us. The Arizona Housing Fund has an advisory committee. There's six of us, all seasoned, experienced people in the world of homeless and housing. And we decide, we take these grant applications, these grant recommendations, and we're the one, this committee is the group that decides how much money and to whom it goes to. Our fund is held, as I said, at the Arizona Community Foundation. So we then direct the Arizona Community Foundation to send the grants out. So it's really simple. This last go around didn't take much time at all. And it was really needed by these nonprofits. So we were happy to help. I will mention one other thing. Since we are a fund held at the Arizona Community Foundation, we don't have any staff. So it's a bunch of volunteers. It's people like me, my wife, Tim Sprague, and a whole bunch of other people who are just doing this out of kindness of their heart to make this work. Any expenses that the fund has, like website development or some PR or whatever it is, it's all underwritten by very generous donors. So we're always able to say and happy to say 100 cents of every dollar that goes into our fund actually goes to the cause. So there's no overhead. There's no percentage. It's a dollar in, a dollar out, period. Everybody can feel good about that.
That's fantastic. So take me into the minds of that advisory group, if you will. You stated that, you know, there's $1.4 million that has been donated. 850,000 of that just went out in what I think is your first set of grants. Is that accurate?
It is. Yeah, right.
Okay. So that delta there, you know, you've got 550-ish thousand dollars remaining. Are you waiting until maybe you hit a certain threshold with additional donations at like $2 million or something like that? And then maybe you know that you have enough funding to play with. Is there a waiting line of people who have raised organizations who have raised their hand to say, we've got something that could go online and could use additional support. Take us through that thought process of how you expend these funds and when.
Yes, the logistics of the grants, again, our intent, this is not an endowment. We're not really intending on holding anything back. Actually, a whole bunch of money has been raised since our grants. So that's actually where the spread is. But our whole intent is every time we have dollars to give away, we're trying to give it away. Once we opened up for business, opened the grants process, I think we had 6 applications come in with 4 of them qualifying under our criteria. The other 2 didn't quite qualify. So those 4 actually all got money, pretty close to what they were asking for, if not to the dollar, what they needed. And so we're hopeful, again, this is a statewide effort. Here we had 2 in Maricopa County, 1 in the city of Glendale, 1 in Northern Arizona in Chino Valley. We're hopeful that we're going to see some grant applications coming in from Southern Arizona, Tucson metro area, more from Northern Arizona. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for more grants. And again, we're telling virtually all the nonprofits know about us now that when you have an opportunity and you need dollars to make that project happen, again, we're some of these projects cost $10 million. So obviously we're not the bulk of it. A lot of it's government underwritten, but there's always a spread. And there's a spread between what the government is going to fund and what also is needed to make that project work. And that's where the private sector has a role to play. So you look at groups like our fund, Home Matters Fund, there's other groups out there and we're all collaborating with each other where you're going to get to a point someday where every deal that comes online, UMOM steps up and says, I'm going to buy this 80 unit project for housing families. They're going to be able to go to a place, a table that says, I need $10 million to do this, where you're going to get Arizona Department of Housing or Maricopa County, Home Matters Fund, Arizona Housing Fund, Arizona Community Foundation, all coming together saying, I can put this piece in, I can put this piece in, boom, here's your $10 million, go do it. That's going to happen. We're really close to that now, and I see that that's the future of working in this state to find these solutions to this problem.
That's a beautiful vision. And it's something that we at Vitalist often talk about, that these complex problems require often complex solutions, even if it's something as simple as we need to bring more housing units onto the map. What do you think needs to happen between where we are now compared to where that vision is in the future? How do we need to start coming together to have these conversations about what private industry, public industry, nonprofits can do to come together in order to start addressing this issue? Or do you actually see it happening right now?
I think it's happening more informally right now, but I think it can happen formally in a really great way. And I just had this discussion with some people about this just recently, where I just said, if you could really formalize this, and again, you get the government funders together with the private funders, and you bring these 20 nonprofits into a room. And you say to these nonprofits, okay, we got our act together now. We're ready. So when you meet these criterias, okay, now right now the big opportunity for providing new housing is repurposing old motels and old hotels. Used to be buying apartment buildings, but apartment buildings have gotten so expensive. The new value proposition is buying a used motel and repurposing it. There's a lot of that product out there. So I see a world here soon where you get all those stakeholders in one room and you basically say green light, because all of those nonprofits want to do more. They can do more. They're really good at it. Yeah. Again, I travel around the country and I go look at other nonprofits and how they do it, how other states do this. We're as good as there is around this country. And if you turn these nonprofits loose and say, green light, go. Whether it's 50 units, 80 units, 100 units, 300, whatever it is, go. We'll figure out the money piece of it. But it's going to take, again, collaboration between the government funders and the private sector. And you know what? It's going to be magical. It's a little informal right now, but it's going to formalize here pretty quickly, I think.
Have you had conversations with government officials or decision makers about this fund, and how have they received the news that this exists?
Yeah, so I have. They love it because you know what? Everybody expects our governments, federal, state, local, to bear the brunt of this problem, okay? But they'll be the first ones to say, hey, we're happy to jump in, but we can't do it alone. And there's got to be some skin in the game from the business communities, the private sector, and the philanthropic communities. That's the beauty of this collaboration right now. So I think when you can, you know, everybody wants the public-private partnership thing. Well, this is public-private partnership. And those examples I gave you of like our last four grants, those are all basically public-private partnerships. So that's where we're going. I have had discussions with all the way with Tom Simplot, ADOH director, and everybody buys into it. So I think it's more of a formalized collaboration, and you're going to see a lot more good things come out of all of these groups I've mentioned in 2023 and beyond.
That's fantastic. In the 3 years of this fund, has there been anything that surprised you? You mentioned that you started off thinking it was going to be one thing, you pivoted and you turned this into a privately, like a volunteer-based fund. Has anything surprised you that you've seen in the relatively short lifetime of this fund thus far?
Yeah, another great question. I'd say a couple of things. One, I'm very transactional by nature, just what I do for a living. I sell real estate for a big corporation. I like things to happen really fast, and nothing happens fast. So anytime, like, God bless the Arizona Association of Realtors. Okay, those are our rock stars. Those are the realtors, all 50,000 of them around the state. They're the ones out there promoting this. They are awesome. But that was just a perfect example. I don't know how many meetings I had with the Arizona Association of Realtors from their CEO, Michelle Lind, who, by the way, is on our advisory committee. She's awesome. Executive committees, board meetings, multiple board meetings, multiple councils, to get these groups to adopt and to endorse and to integrate it just takes a lot of time and effort. So I guess I was a little, again, not having rolled out an effort like this before. I just thought, boom, let's go do it. Things take time. The title company thing I've been working on for 3 years, still haven't been able to get it, but we're going to get there. I don't know if it's surprising as much as it's heartwarming, but I pitch this a lot. I make a lot of presentations. I speak to a lot of groups. I make presentations to found. I've never, not once, made a presentation where somebody said to me, I don't like this. This isn't a good idea. It's not my thing. I'm out. The worst reception I ever get is, I really like this. I want to get involved. I just got to figure out how to do it. So nobody likes rejection. I guess I'm always prepared for it, but almost always is, this is fantastic. I just got to figure it out. So that's been surprising and heartwarming. I'll tell you with one really great story, this true story, which speaks to the kindness of our fellow citizens. You can go to our website and there's a contact us button. You can press and fill out some information. I get those emails. I get that information. And sadly, 99% of them are people who need help. I'm being evicted from my apartment. I have nowhere to go. Can you help? I'm losing my house, whatever it is. And we immediately give them information of resources, who to call, et cetera. But one day I get an email that says, hey, I run a small family foundation and I'm following what you're doing. I've seen some articles and I'd like to talk to you about it. I said, great. This is almost a year ago. So I follow up with this really nice woman who runs this. She kept saying it's a small family foundation. And she asked me a whole bunch of good questions in our conversation. And at the end, she said, well, tell me about the grants you've made. And I said, well, we haven't made any grants yet because we're still pretty new, but we're going to be making grants soon. She goes, well, what's soon? And I said, well, as soon as we hit $1 million. Again, this is about a year ago, maybe 11 months ago. And she says, well, how close are you to $1 million? And I said, well, I just checked yesterday. We're at 925. So another $75,000. We're going to hit that milestone and we're going to start our grants process. And she goes, well, how long will that take you to get to $1 million? I said, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months, 5 months, depending how things go. And she said, how about if I get you there today? And I said, you are fantastic. And she did. She wrote a check for $75,000 that got us to $1 million. That started the process. And I just remember hanging up the phone saying, wow, there are some really cool people, nice people who want to do good in this world. And that woman was special. And that I'll always remember that conversation because it just took me by. So I was expecting $5,000 or $10,000. That would be a nice conversation. And she just said, "What do you need to get there?" And she did it. So that's just a good story to remind us of the kindness around.
That's incredible. That's a great story. You've identified, obviously, homelessness, housing instability is a huge challenge in Arizona. It's a huge challenge nationally. What else needs to happen in order to address this challenge in Arizona?
I think it's mostly political will. This new administration and new, potentially some different kind of funding coming into place. I think it's to the point now where when there's enough pressure put on our political bodies to take action, particularly when you see what's going, the solution, when you can go look at a permanent supportive housing project and how all these people are getting, I mean, Vitalist, you know, you guys are always out there advocating for, you know, housing is healthcare, right? You can't fix these problems if you don't have a roof over your head. You right. can't fix addiction. You can't, you know, the meds that people have to take for mental health. This can't be done without a roof over your head. So whatever the issue is out there, you can't get better, or it's really hard to get better without a roof, a stable roof over your head. So we know what the problems are out there. We know what the streets are like, and not everybody's coming off the street. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not that idealistic. But again, I go back to those 11,000 people today have their hand up and they don't have a place to live. That's our immediate need. So I think if there's political will where the population, the citizens of our state put enough pressure on our governing bodies that says, we have a problem, we know the solution, we can do it. It's going to take some money and some willpower, but let's be a leader on this issue. Let's show these other communities and these other states that are really spiraling downhill right now, right? I mean, how many videos do we have to see of LA and San Francisco and New York? It's awful. We don't want to become that. We know how to not become that. Have the political will. Let's do it. You got your private sector coming along with you to help out and have the will to do it. And to me, that's the piece. If you have that piece, then the rest is going to follow. And again, Arizona can lead on this issue and be the envy of the other 49 states for pulling something like this off.
So Arizona is leading the way in this. Have you seen this take hold, this strategy of having these donations going to a state fund? Have you seen this take hold in any other states?
Some states, a state or two, have kind of where I came up with the idea, but I think it's the state of Minnesota, but I'm not sure. Has it? There's a percentage of a sale and a transaction that gets taxed that goes into this, to a fund similar to ours. It's monitored by the state. Okay, and I just thought, okay, well, again, nobody in this state, the taxing thing is not popular here. That's why I made it $25 because yeah. And everybody goes, why'd you make it so low? And I always go, because nobody's offended by $25. Okay. If you are, whether you're buying a $1 million house or a $200,000 condo, I guarantee you the cheapest line item on your closing statement is going to be a $25 donation to the Arizona Housing. So it's just so non-offensive that it's hard to say no to. It's kind of like, again, I always liken it to the cash register checkout program at a grocery store. If you're shopping at Fry's, you know, how often you want to donate a dollar to Phoenix Children's Hospital or Arizona Humane Society. You know what? Some people don't donate the dollar. Some people don't. Some people donate five. We're going to be the same thing. Yeah. You're going to be asked. If you want to, great. If you don't want to, that's okay too. Some people, you know, we're shocked. Every once in a while, somebody will donate $500 from a closing.
I'm also curious if this strategy, if it actually helps the long game in building buy-in from Arizonans, right? It's one thing to kind of, and listen, I'm the policy director at Vitalist Health Foundation. Like, my mind immediately goes to, well, how do you create the policy so that this is baked into every single transaction for housing? The risk, though, is that you don't get enough stakeholder input. People don't have time to kind of give their thoughts and opinions about something and you get pushback right away. So I'm curious if in the long run, this voluntary donation actually helps to build will faster than
exactly
or policy.
Yeah. Yeah. We always say, you know, what a lot of people really like about this program and why a lot of it's just totally sustainable. Right. So it's like for those of us who are in the nonprofit world, we always joke that on December 31st, you scream hallelujah, like you got to pay all your bills for the year, all your staff, you made it, the doors were okay. And then on January 1st, you start your panic all over again. Like, okay, now I got to support the staff. I got to keep my doors open. I got to raise it. Okay. This is a totally sustainable model. It's going to go on in perpetuity long after I'm just serving on an advisory committee and somebody else is running this, that it just becomes part of our culture in this state, that, you know, when you buy and sell a house, when you do it, you're going to be asked, people like it. It's tax deductible. They can get behind it. They don't have to, it's seamless. There's no credit cards or checks exchanging hands. And it's just be sustainable. And it's just going to go on. And the more people find out about it, the more they like it. I hope people listening to this will go, man, this is awesome. How do I get involved? I make presentations all the time to companies who want to get involved and do. And like I said, if you hear me out, give me 20 minutes, you're going to get involved. Let me tell you one other really exciting game changer that's happening right now.
Yeah.
So in addition to the whole realtor community and title company situation that we're targeting, the other game changer we've been working on since inception is how do we get the apartment owners involved in this conversation? How do we get the multifamily organizations involved in and be part of the solution? Obviously, they don't do transactions very much like a home. Okay, so we've been working with the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. Their CEO is Courtney Lavinius since inception. And we now have a plan that hopefully they're going to roll out across the board. But there's been an organization called Next Metro Communities. They run multiple rental communities around the state. And they were the guinea pig for this program. And what they do is a few things. One is every time they receive a lease application, they commit to donating $5 to the Arizona Housing Fund. It doesn't seem like a lot, but apartment owners get several hundred thousand lease applications a year. It's millions. They're offering to their clients on their portals places to donate to this. And maybe the most creative thing is they're allowing their clients to do something called a rental roundup. So if your monthly rent is $1,495 a month, you want to round that up to $1,500 with $5 going to the Arizona Housing Fund. Okay, they've rolled it out. It's now part of their culture. Their clients like it. It's rolling. Pretty soon, sometime in 2023, this is going to be rolled out to as many apartment owners around the state who are willing to do it. We know a whole bunch are going to. That's a game changer. That's millions of dollars a year coming in from the apartment owners of the state. They get a lot of bad press. You're the ones causing a lot of this. Well, they're going to be part of the solution now. So that's a game changer. The title company situation, when those two things are up and running, we are off and running and we are solving this problem.
That's great. One of the questions that I thought about earlier was kind of what's in it for those organizations that decide to donate. And what I just heard you say is that, you know, there's particularly for multifamily housing units and owners of those and apartment owners, that there's a real negative stigma that we're seeing these rents skyrocket. And so fingers start getting pointed to the owners of those units. And so this is one way, an important way to potentially say, you know what, we're doing the best that we can and we're contributing to the larger good as well.
Yeah. And just think about it. If they suddenly are producing several as a collective group, if they're producing several million dollars a year to go towards housing of the, talk about goodwill, talk about making a splash, talk about like being creative to solving a problem. Not that there won't be heat on them for raising rates and all those other market issues they have to deal with, but they're diving in head first. So again, we're going to have some announcements coming up soon, but 2023 is their year. It's been tested now and they're really excited about it. We're really excited about it. And again, when you start seeing all these industries that are part of our collective housing universe coming together to try to solve this problem. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful thing. And again, we're the state that's going to lead on this and show the rest of the country that this is how you do it. This is the model and it works.
I have to ask you, you're a national executive for the real estate asset sales division of Bank of America, one of the largest corporations in the United States. What brings you as Howard Epstein to this work? And what are some of the factors that you think brought you to creating the Arizona Housing Fund and actually identifying that this is something that needed to happen? There's plenty of executives in large Fortune 500 companies that don't do this type of stuff. So what is it that brought you to this, and how do we bottle that?
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's nothing special. It's just, look, this is my passion. Like, everybody has their charity or philanthropic passions. There's a whole bunch of great things out there that people work on. This happens to be mine. The problem is so urgent. The need for solution is so urgent that it's just kind of felt natural for me to do this. You know, not unlike a lot of other companies, if you work at Bank of America long enough, you run a division for Bank of America, you're almost like classically or culturally trained to identify a problem, come up with a solution, and execute on that. That's what leaders, managers do. You're expected to do that at Bank of America. What's the problem? Identify it, come up with a solution, execute. This is no different. We know the problem. We came up with a solution. It's creative. It's interesting. It's workable. It's sustainable. And now we're sort of in that executing phase. And I don't have to sell too much on this. It's like everybody knows this problem exists. Everybody wants to solve it. So I don't have to convince people that there's a problem. I can show them the solution. And then it's just a matter of getting people involved and getting and wanting to say, yes, I want to be part of it. So there's nothing magical. I'm thankful. I have enough flexibility in my job. Bank of America has been so supportive, both nationally and locally, of me on this, doing this work. Bank of America is very philanthropic in our community. And look, my colleagues are really proud of this effort that we're putting in place. They endorse it. They support it. Our market president, Benito Almanza, he's a good friend. He hugs me every time he sees me and says, I'm so proud of what you're doing. So it's a beautiful relationship I have with the bank. They want to see this happen. There's been talk that maybe our bank leads the effort to roll this out nationally, because we're in most markets that have these issues. And maybe if they see that this is working here in Arizona, maybe Bank of America is the one who says, you know what, we can sponsor this in other markets to make this happen. So it's just part of my fabric, part of our bank culture. And I'm proud to be with Bank of America and be able to do this as well.
Now, it definitely is a great shining star example of some of the work that's happening in Arizona. We have plenty of things that are exposed in national news quite often that give us a black eye here and there, but this is something that really shows the innovation that's taking place in this state. Howard, last question for all of our listeners who are out there, anybody who wants to forward this podcast to friends or family members, what's the one thing that you want them to take home from this conversation?
Yeah, you know what? Spread the words. If you know real estate companies, realtors, brokers, title companies, if you are in that industry or you know people who are in this industry who might want to get involved, tell them about it. Tell them to go to our website. Follow us on social media. We have a really robust social media program where several times a week we're posting content on our partners, on our grants, on the problem, on issues, on all kinds of things. It's amazing how those platforms really help the effort. And so I would just say, if you're listening and you like what you hear, please follow us, seek us out. If you got a company or you want me to come or have somebody from our fund come speak to your company to talk about this, we always make ourselves available. So be part of the solution. Join our cause. We'll take anybody and everybody who wants to help us.
Howard Epstein, founder of the Arizona Housing Fund. If you have any questions, go to www.arizonahousingfund.org. Howard, thank you so much for joining the Vitalist Spark podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
We said it during our conversation. Housing instability is a complex problem, and complex problems often require complex solutions. Even when the solution, such as build more housing, may seem simple. The Arizona Housing Fund stands to benefit hundreds and eventually thousands of Arizonans who face the many hardships that come with not having a stable roof overhead. Equally important, the fund serves as a shining example of social entrepreneurship and private industry philanthropy that has the potential to catalyze new resources through public-private partnerships. Thank you, Howard, for your vision, your determination, and execution in bringing this important asset to Arizona. If you're listening and have any questions about the Arizona Housing Fund, be sure to check out their website at www.arizonahousingfund.org. As always, many thanks to the team at Gordon C. James Public Relations and Rob Trigg at Star Worldwide Networks for production and sound design. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.